Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome back. This is Elizabeth Cronin, one of your hosts, and today I am talking with Nadia Davis about parenting and mindfulness. Last month, I had the pleasure of talking with Nadia about her new book, Home is Within You, a memoir of recovery and redemption. In the interview, we talked a lot about Nadia's experiences with trauma, her struggles with addiction, and her transformational healing. We spent a great deal of time on the devastating impact of deeply felt shame. In addition, we discussed the need for serious changes in the way the systems within our society deal with trauma and addiction. Our time together passed quickly, and it was impossible to touch upon all the meaningful content within Nadia's memoir. One of those topics, parenting and mindfulness, is of great interest to both Nadia and myself. So, we arranged for a second meeting to continue our conversation with a focus on this special and important subject. For more information about Nadia, her book, and her interest in parenting and mindfulness, please visit her website at www.nadia-davis.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is Elizabeth Cronin, one of your hosts. And today I am talking with Nadia Davis about parenting and mindfulness. Welcome back. I'm so glad to talk with you again.
Thank you for having me back.
As I was mentioning in the intro, the time went so quickly last time we connected. And we were able to arrange to just have another get-together and talk some more, and this time really focus on parenting and mindfulness. So maybe we can start by you telling us why this means so much to you.
I'm living the work, and I think that the more that we share the stories in real time, especially for those in trauma and addiction recovery or any struggles, it's the more that we share how we're using tools we've learned, skills we've learned in real time, the more that shame is banned and the more vulnerable that we can be with each other. And that includes as a mother. I do it often, and there's strength in it. And doing so as a daughter has actually allowed my mom to open up to me a little bit more also. So it's a full circle. I also want to say that I'm no guru, and that a lot of the learnings, you know, that I mention, they're touched upon in Home is Within You. But a lot of the stuff that I will share here and that I speak about in a lot of my live, the work that I do, you know, live on Instagram, It's a combination of things. It's from trauma therapy. It's from A Course in Miracles. It's from Kundalini Yoga. It's from 12-step recovery. And it all combined to help me find a home within that I call home, that is a safe and clear and calm space. But I will reference terms and learnings. And when I do so, I'm not pretending to be like a guru or anything. I'm simply saying how I live the work for myself and then with my children. So
I think that's helpful too, because I did note in your book, Home is Within, you do reference like attachments, you know, secure attachments and different things like that. And I think that's helpful for anyone who wants to learn more about some aspect, I think it's great that you're referencing the source, or, you know, the
right,
the area where you got your skills or acquired the wisdom. I thought maybe it would be helpful for me to ask you to say something that you wrote, say something about what you wrote. Really, it's the topic of your whole chapter 20 in the book. And you kind of write that. Well, you write on the second page in chapter 20 that you were really, when you got to a certain point where you were really doing well yourself, you know, managing, starting to feel like you'd been through so much, but really feeling like you were on the right track. You developed a lot of skills. You were doing the work yourself. That in doing the work yourself, you got to a certain place where you then were able to start to think about and really focus a little more on how did you wrote right in the book, how did my trauma and bad choices affect my children? And I just got like a shiver when I read that, because even I think any parent, even without trauma and without a struggle of addiction, I think we all need to wonder and right, and think about how the way we are, the way we live our lives, affects our children. So I thought that might be a nice entry into, you've clearly thought this through a lot, and mm-hmm, you do share in the book too some very intentional ways that you try to consider.
I think that the biggest effect on them was developing secure attachment. And that the broken household created a level of physical anxiety. And so, you know, my goal is to teach them to not seek the outside solution, the award, the grade,
the quick fix.
And then eventually, I mean, I have a 19-year-old and then I have 7-year-old twin boys, but you know, the drink, the all of it. So that gets to this work today. It's showing them secure attachment, really by providing a safe ambiance, stability, you know, regularity and schedule. And I only have so much power over that because we have a shared custody. And so it comes from what energy and space that I create within me. And then it also arises in interacting as a co-parent. And then I can observe the kids and start to help to grow a home within them. And that I do very specific things for that I can get into. So
yeah,
but I want to emphasize it really, it starts within, to be able to even recognize the effect on the children.
Say more about that.
So when we are in it, when we are either in our addiction or are in a trigger and have not gained skills to be able to recognize that, we will not be aware of how or why our children may be behaving in a certain way. You know, I didn't know the word secure attachment or healthy attachment. And when they have anxiety, for example, when I'm dropping them off or you know, it was bad in the past. In the past, I would have gone straight into my own guilt and shame. And I would have made the situation about me, and I wouldn't have been able to be present. And so, you know, getting away from a word of character defect, of selfishness or anything like that in the 12-step program I learned in trauma therapy. Okay, this is shame and guilt coming up. I am aware of it, but what is happening right here and right now? And so that took a lot of internal work. And I would say that situations like that still come up now and then, but I see them as like these grand opportunities. And so the more internal work that we do, the more observant we are of ourselves, the less in our moment, in ourselves we are. And then we're just fully present for our child and can, you know, replicate what we learned and walk them through different tools. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to explaining kind of the process that I've done and how the last couple of years, it's really, I mean, it's done wonders, but we are in physical bodies. And so and they're in physical bodies and they're in a mind. And so it's not as though, you know, the work ends. It's an ongoing process. Like I said, living the work myself, it will be helping them, you know, into adulthood to remember the tools that hopefully they gained that I never gained. So,
right. So let's break that down for listeners, because that's a nice example. You're taking, say, your twins, they're 7 years old, mm-hmm. somewhere, and you're dropping them off and you're going to leave. And let's break down like what would be so, and it might not happen that often these days, but an example would be for you that they start to show signs like, oh no, don't leave, or they appear to be anxious, or they get reluctant to get out of the car or something like that. And what I think I heard you just say is that then you would start to feel like somehow it would become about you, like, oh, I must not have been a good mother. They don't want to go. Or tell us a little bit about like what was the thinking that would come up in you with the shame?
Yeah, the most recent situation I can think of was on their father's time, one of them had a rehearsal for an elementary talent show. And I was the one that, you know, had been working with him and he wanted to leave with mommy. And there was no kind of flexibility offered from their father. So what I did was, well, in the past, it would have been, you know, how can I reassure him that everything's going to be okay? I would have verbally said, you know, you're okay right now. Everything's going to be okay. But in my head, it would have taken me away to worries for the future, to, you know, the unknowns, a feeling of powerlessness, over them. There would have been a myriad of thoughts taking me out of the moment, versus more recently, you know, over the last couple of years, it's been more, this is because of this, and deal with this right here in front of you right now. When there's moments like that of like high tension or at dis-ease, mm-hmm. I see it as an opportunity. It doesn't affect me in a, oh my God, I got to fix this right away. You know, there's a sense of, you know, okay, what's happening in his body? He's restless and crying or whatever it might be, because he's feeling it in his body. It's not even at a point of,
what would you say he's feeling? He's feeling
anxiety or it's a restlessness, anxiety. And children come from a place of harmony, and the mind creates this conflict. And for him and children that have gone through separation or separated homes or situations where I had to leave to get help, you know, there's an immediate survivalistic mind. And so it's manifested in their body. And unfortunately, he learned that early. And so if I'm observing, you know, him in his body, I don't say like, you know, calm down, that you don't go, I don't go there. Instead, the mindfulness work that I have done is to help me see like the somatic effect, and to first, you know, maybe touch his knee, you know, hold him and try to help him feel in his body safe. And then I'll say, you know, I'll put a name on the feeling. I have a big emoji charts in the house that have emojis for different feelings. Once he can get to that point, then eventually some breath work can be introduced. But in the initial moment, it's not letting the situation have a train ride of thoughts in my head, and then recognizing, okay, it's in his body right now. If I remain calm in mind, I can give that to him. Then there's space within me to offer it.
That's so interesting. My introduction to mindfulness was through training in dialectical behavior therapy, which has a mindfulness component. Oh. And in this treatment program, I mean, it was very often people would say to each other, so it was a woman's group treatment program, and staff and the women in the treatment would say, get out of your head, get out of your head. But there's this way that, like, when we feel uncomfortable in our bodies, we get out of the present moment and we sort of get into our head. And that's what I think you're describing, is just a train of thoughts that hijack us. And the next thing you know, we might be saying to our child, like, oh, you're going to be fine. Meanwhile, we're just thinking about all kinds of things. And what it sounds like you're able to do is tolerate the discomfort that you experience in your body, seeing your child be uncomfortable in his body. You're able to just stay there so that you don't have to go escape to your head. And you're just able to say to him, oh, you seem anxious. And you're able to provide some sort of soothing touch. And just take a moment to just be there with him in his anxiety.
I mean, this is the beauty of recovery, mindfulness, and parenting, is it's in real time. I mean, if we're doing it for ourselves and we've been practicing it in that moment and it's quicker, it's almost like in real time with your child. So my time has gotten a lot shorter to be able to then have that overlap. So we don't need to beat ourselves up for a thought, or if one, you know, is sticking. It's just about implementing it within ourselves and beginning like that overlap with the child. There's no perfect, you know, black and white, or, okay, I'm all calm within now all the time, you know, and I'm going to just teach my child. That's kind of what I mean by living the work, is sometimes it's quick and other times it just takes longer. So it's the more that we practice on our own and enter any situation calm and with the space within, the more that we are able to begin right away in any situation. But I want to point out to listeners that if immediately upon a situation, a lot comes up, do not beat yourself up. It's an opportunity to do it within you and then along with your child, just calming the body and putting a name on it and replicating an example. Eventually, you know, it can get to really, really powerful, cool moments. So
what do you think is helpful for somebody who's in the habit of beating themselves up a lot?
Oh, wow. A parent, I believe the most important thing that you can do is to set aside time every single day to connect to something beyond you. And if you don't believe in a quote unquote God, I use the word it, you can simply create something of your own to sit just quietly and observe your mind. We can never just stop our minds completely, but a space where you know you can turn to anytime, any place that you create for yourself, that is like your source of power and truth and calming build that within in the morning and the night, and you can tap into that wherever you're at.
I think for anyone that hasn't had much experience with sitting quietly alone, it's hard to sort of imagine that there's something to gain from that. And yet there is. I mean, I think what you're addressing is that connection to something larger than yourself, whether you call it, if you're religious, you think it's God, or if, even if you just think it's Mother Nature or the universe, that experience comes from getting beyond the thinking
right
the time, right? So that's the
need. Well, the first time my therapist said to me, you know, you're not a body or your thoughts. I thought, you know, what on earth is this woman saying? And it was at the height of a lot going on in my life. And sometimes even a symbol, a picture, drawing a circle and, you know, seeing that, okay, this is your mind, this small pie piece, you know, and the rest is your true self. If it's a visual reminder, if it's a mantra, if it's a song, ideally a space, a physical space, you know, anything to set aside for you to separate in some tiny, tiny way from the rest of the world, where you can say, okay, today I will be gentler on myself. I will observe my thoughts a little more. And when I notice I'm not, or when I'm running in them, I'm not going to beat myself up. And just starting with that is a really good baby step. And then you can build in some breath work to just calm your body.
So you do a lot of breath work, and you do meditate or yoga, and you have a routine in place where you do have a daily practice?
Yes, and I call that time time with my beloved. Mm-hmm. It's a yeah.
It means like your beloved, meaning yourself or your beloved.
I guess both.
Yeah. I would see it. Yeah.
Yeah. In Kundalini yoga, there's a mantra, and it explains the whole creation of the universe. And for me, it's Ekankar Satyanam, and it's from nothing and everything, or Ek. There was movement and things were created. Everything was created, and one of them is your true self. Nirvol Nirvair is without fear, without judgment. And, you know, in that space that we don't have the answers to what started everything, that is like the simplest explanation, whether, you know, you're an atheist and agnostic, or have a religion, or are Buddhist, or a meditator, or don't believe in anything, the ocean, something, it and everything moved and created things. And from that we came. And sometimes it's just listening to that mantra. And in that space, I just say, okay, I'm here for today. Hold this weight that's on me. Or I don't have the answers for this. Or what is this trying to teach me? And if everything is great, it's what do I need to offer? Help me to be of service. It depends on what's going on, but it's that simple of a unknown that I connect to every day. I can show you the space in my room. And yeah,
I think people that follow you on Instagram can see when that space that you mentioned you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
When you just said those phrases from Kundalini yoga, I caught my attention. You said fear and something else.
It's nirvol nirvair, and it's in the first six words. It's without fear and without judgment, formless, timeless.
You know what I just came to my mind when you said that, I was thinking, if you have a regular practice of sort of orienting yourself to navigate life that way without fear, without judgment,
right,
you're practicing that on a regular basis for mantra or through quieting your mind, it just made me think again to go back to you, your son wanting to stay with you and having to go with dad and showing anxiety at the separation, that if you have that as that sort of in the back of your mind, without fear, without judgment,
uh-huh,
you don't judge yourself for having a moment of feeling of stress. You don't judge your child for crying or fussing. You don't judge your child's father for being inflexible. You don't have judgment. You don't have fear. You don't have the fear of like, well, this is terrible if this continues, or this is a sign that he's going to be miserable all night. Or I just like that. I really like that. I like how you presented that and how without fear, without judgment can be, I think in my training and meditation training, we would say also without resistance, you know, like we just, you were talking about that too, sort of just allowing things to be.
Right.
How does that help children?
Allowing or without fear, without judgment.
Yeah, but approaching your life without fear, without judgment, with acceptance.
I think it's hard to teach children that. But I mean, getting back to kind of the core structure of our mind, that we are, I mean, we're infinite beings, whole and complete is what I believe. And then we're in a body that has a mind that creates what I call these attack thoughts. And they are mainly fear and judgment. And within, this is where shame is so powerful. And so with children, I think that when they are in fear or when they are judging another, I mean, let's just stick with their fears. Most of the time, it will manifest in a calling a sibling a name or you know, some sort of acting out, some sort of they are afraid that they're not as important, or they are afraid mommy's going to leave. They are afraid of a whole variety of things. It could be something simple. It could be, you know, very, very simple in the moment. It doesn't have to be something that's trauma related at all. And so I think for children, with my understanding that fear and judgment are the main things that separate us from our true self, if I am seeing what I mentioned earlier, like a somatic body response to something, that is where it's okay, put a name on, use your mind in the right way, in my head I'm saying, and you know, what are you feeling right now? And I have the understanding that it's coming from his mind that is simply trying to help him survive. So I don't have judgment. I say no shaming words because I have that awareness. So then it's helping him not to do that within himself, to not act out or say something or do something that he will feel ashamed about. And it's also helping him to not have shame about the initial feeling or emotion in the first place. So if he puts a name on it, it loses kind of the mental psychological power, and then it gets into the vulnerability. I mean, I have learned that human connection, as including creating secure attachment for children, requires vulnerability. And Marissa Franco had her quote, she says, what we feel vulnerable about is what we have been taught to feel shame in or about ourselves. So that is how that's how this can help children. It's, I can't say you're having an attack thought. I can be aware and notice, okay, he is in fear. Let this not become something that he feels ashamed about within. It's okay to be afraid, nor hopefully it won't lead to an acting out that he would feel shame about. Instead, it'd say, let's try and calm the body, allow the vulnerability, put a name on the feelings. And the cool thing about that over and over time is that they're proud when they get even halfway there to that point. They're it's like this weight off of them. It's this weight that's just like they feel empowered, like, well, you made me angry to each other. And, you know, or one of them wrote, you know, the other day when I wasn't allowing him to go outside and play in the rain, got out a piece of paper and wrote, I'm angry, mama, you know. It's beautiful. So again, there's no shame within, and there's no shaming. That's kind of how I apply the whole concept of attack thoughts and not separating him from what I know is his true self with shame. Yeah. That's a lot.
I'm angry mama. Mm-hmm. What would be a mindful response to that for you?
I say, you know, I might say I'm proud of you for finding the feeling, or I would say, you know, tell me more. And why
give him a chance to express
what angered
it.
And then it always gets to, you know, that middle part, like the middle between the stimuli and the response. It always gets to the truth, you know. They always, you know, would say, like, oh, I wanted to play, you know, I wanted to go and play with you. I wanted to get that, you know, the 10th one this time, you know, the basketball. You know, it'll get to the truth. It's really behind the behavior is if you say, well, you know, why really are you angry? You know, and it's providing that safe place where they can be vulnerable.
The other thing I'm thinking is that it also takes time.
Yes. Yes. It's a process. You mean in the moment?
In the moment. Like,
yes. And with twins, sometimes that's not easy because one will have, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's golden moments all the time, little things. Right. Another thing I want to point out is there's other little things I do. I mean, I'll have my mantra music on playing all the time, and I'll have my books out, and then the feelings charts. And are you there?
Yes.
I had a notice on my phone. You know, there's stuff that's around, and then they see, you know, mommy saying the mantras, or you know, doing my own, like, okay, I'm gonna take a deep breath right now, and little things like that. I've done FaceTime little breath work, and, you know, four or five different consistent things that I'll tell them to do in person or on FaceTime, and it adds up. It does take time, but the more that they're exposed to those little golden nuggets and snippets over time, you know, you will feel calmer and they will begin to gain these little gems and to be exposed to just a different way of living entirely. Yeah. So they are kids and their minds will be busy, and you know, kids can't necessarily they don't meditate unless they're sleeping, you know. But they, you know, they'll remember deep breathing. You know, they'll remember naming a feeling. You know, they'll remember feeling safe and being able to be vulnerable with their feelings. And that's a heck of a lot more than most of us received when we were young.
Yeah, I'm thinking of this poem that I used to keep on my refrigerator when my kids were really young.
Okay.
Children learn what they live. It, you know, talks about that, the psychological concept that we talk about, like modeling, or even what's a role model. So you're talking about by your repeatedly acting in a certain way and approaching situations a certain way, that over and over. They see that. And it is interesting because I think what you just said, it like it's different than what many people got, because many people got the don't cry or, you know, or that's ridiculous. So many other like comments that probably were more shaming. So
exactly.
And it does work. I mean, why are people so prone to addiction? Why are we all looking for a quick fix? Because that's the message we got, is that we're not okay. What we feel isn't okay. And it gets so intolerable that the pain drives us to all kinds of unhealthy behaviors, right?
Right. And we won't reach out for help. We'll keep it like a little hidden, you know, being inside us, and it's the mind creating shame from fear and from self-judgment and or outside judgment that we're remembering. And, you know, it's the mind's attack thoughts, as I call it. And, you know, I hope that my children don't have to live that way.
Well, that actually makes me think of something else in the book that I wanted to bring up. And that was, it's towards the end of the book. Mm-hmm. You very generously share a conversation you had with your oldest son, I think Diego, about he's sitting down trying to write a college essay. And I think they asked him to talk about his shortcomings or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see, I have notes here. And you're trying to help him write this, and you're trying to encourage him not to ignore or stuff down the hard stuff.
Right.
And that just seemed like another good example of where you were trying to encourage him not to try to hide or minimize or deny. You were trying to help him, you know, put into words just what he's experienced in a way that demonstrates insight, not any kind of like flaw or weakness.
Exactly. And see, the mind goes immediately to this self-criticism. And it actually was a strength in him. And I remember that. I have a recent story that I'd like to say with regards to him. But in that moment, he was writing his college essays and was asked to, you know, describe a difficult time in his life. And he's like, I really don't know what to say. And, you know, it wasn't weaknesses. It was his strengths he had a hard time identifying. And this is like straight A kid. He's such a good person. And I said, well, what about the last couple of years? This is a few years ago. So it was like 4 or 5 years ago. And, what was going on within you during that time? It must have been really, you know, a difficult time. And that's how the essay began. It took somebody else to point out to me what was, you know, the hardest, the biggest challenges in my life. But
you were only able to point it out to him because you were able to be aware of and tolerate that you'd been through the difficult time.
That, yes, as well as not letting guilt and my own shame deny that truth of his, that he was an older brother when mom had to go into treatment and get help with two little brothers in high school. And so, you know, that's his truth. And in that moment, my own shame could have allowed to not even mention it. Instead, it was no shame within me. It was, what was that like for you? Do you, you know, and so it was a beautiful essay about what he, you know, it was beautiful. It was a couple paragraphs long, and he pointed out, how what it was like for him to respect his confidentiality. He pointed out what it was like for him and you know, what he got from it, interestingly, and how he walked through it. And that that was kind of the baseline of his and I's amazing relationship. He and I were always super close, but that period of time, you know, and he just loves me so much. He just didn't want mommy to hurt. You know, that's the reality that our older children, especially. And so, and the younger ones. But more recently, I interviewed him actually on my Instagram. And he has read the full book and, you know, and he kind of knows of this stuff I talk about. And he's like, you know, this home within and this it and higher power stuff. He's an astrophysicist. But he came up with his own analogy to watch his mind's attack thoughts after first thinking himself like, well, what even is a thought? He said, well, you know, thoughts aren't necessarily attached to us. They're more like bundles of waves. And we can decide, just like a radio, to tune in or tune out. And so he thinks of his brain, his mind, as a radio.
I love that.
And, you know, maybe the little ones will come up with their own analogy. Maybe I'll get a radio. So, you know, in a couple of years, I can say, okay, do you want this up or do you want this down? That's another idea. You know, but the boilerplate to all of this is providing a safe place of vulnerability so that that connection can happen where shame is identified and then it's banned within, and then you can provide a place where they cannot go there in their own head. That's basically living the work.
Yeah.
Yeah, earlier we were talking about how you and I were just talking about how we are living the work and how that's what it is. It's just making space to be a human being and to be.
Yes. More recently, I had read chapter 2 to my mom, and that covers my childhood. And I read all of it pretty much, but she stopped me at this point. She goes, wait, I'm remembering something. And she opened up to me about some other things that she had gone through, stuff that I had never known, that I wish I had known. Because as a child, there wasn't really any one-on-one. There was very, very little one-on-one real conversation. And bless her heart, 7 kids in 9 years, an immigrant, and, you know, so what a beautiful thing to be able to share, and then our children can feel safer and vulnerability. And then, but my mom, it was just this beautiful, beautiful moment. And so I received more parenting in that moment.
Different level of connection with your mom.
It just was, it's just one of the rewards of doing our own work within is it allowed to heal some things within in terms of longing for more parenting.
I'm going to switch gears for just a second here, though, because I'm mindful of the time going by.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot to talk about.
There's so much to talk about. I did want to ask you a question, though. For if someone's listening and they're on board, they're like, okay, yes, I want to be a more mindful parent. I love this idea of allowing and less shame and fear and less judgment. What if you don't have a co-parent that embraces this approach? I don't know if that's an issue for you. I mean, I just know that in your situation, you co-parent in separate homes. I don't know if that comes up ever or
all the time.
Okay. So maybe you could say something about that.
Yeah. So absolutely. So I am a co-parent and there's 2 homes and we are very, very different. And I have to accept the fact that what I do is in the past, my heart would be broken over the amount of technology, the amount of a lot of different things, the emotional intelligence or lack thereof that was there, and just a lot. But the first step for me was realizing what I had control over. And my response to him is one thing. Secondly, it was, what am I providing here under this roof? What am I providing in my interactions with my children? And that's all I can do. What I do with my ex-husband is I'll tell him what I'm doing that's working. I will, you know, buy a duplicate of, for example, the Mightier program that I told you about. I bought a second one for him. And for listeners, that's in real time, handheld game that when a child's breath is or heart rate is going so high, it will stop and they have to do deep breathing for it to continue.
Oh, is that the Lavalins or something?
The Lavalins, yeah.
Lavalins.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, the three things are, what do we have control over? Say the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Again, that's personal awareness. Second is embrace and make the most of what we do have control over. Third is non-shame-based communicative suggestions to the co-parent.
Those tips are huge because it's a lot to take on. And I think some really helpful steps, you know, just walking them through it. I think I just want to give you an opportunity now to kind of talk about anything else that you wanted to share or that's on your mind so that we don't run out of time before we get to something that you really wanted to talk about.
I just want to, you know, point out that all of this is a process. All of it is a process. And the simple, simple baby step absolutely is just tuning within and remembering the truth of what we all are and starting simple. You know, our children were born into harmony, and that source of harmony never went away in any of us. It's still there, and our minds will just create the conflict with these thoughts and, you know, tuning into that source of peace. And it is harmony, is right there within. And I just encourage anybody that is struggling to also reach out for help. It's the most courageous thing that we can do. And sometimes it's going within first and finding, you know, that self-worth. So if you're struggling reaching out for help, don't beat yourself up. Go within and you will find that source of hope and light.
Well, I appreciate that today you've have repeatedly made a point of saying that it's hard, that it's a process, that it takes time, because I think something that has always been helpful to me is just remembering the work of researchers on the power of compassion and having self-compassion and being able to have compassion for yourself and then to be able to extend that to others. This is hard. This is hard.
It is hard. And that's how powerful the mind is even in when we recognize that, okay, I want to become more mindful, both for self and as a parent, and we are mindful, our mind will say, you're not mindful enough, or, you know, you're not noticing this. And so it's constant. But again, the more place of self-compassion, the more time that we can create for that, the easier the process is, truly.
Yeah. And for anyone who now might be motivated to try to put aside some time to sit quietly and start to create a place for themselves, I think it's really helpful for them to know that the experience needs to feel good at the start. In the beginning, I know for myself, and in the beginning, it was really hard, and I still have times when it's really hard. Sometimes I sit there and I just feel like restless. I don't want to be there.
Well, that's okay.
Right.
And, you know, the book shows the recovery journey, and at the end, it's like a lot of people are saying, well, it's a quarter of like the peaceful. So when we own the story, and when I explained the process to get to this point today, we are rewriting the story of living the work. And that will be in a second book, hopefully. But this, like the conscious parenting and the self-compassion, it is in real time. And it is a process. And I hope to share a lot more about that. Most of my work today is all in the more mindful parenting and the helping others to ban their shame and to watch our attack thoughts and to get to that home within. So I'm living evidence that it's a process and that it's a continuing living project. And it's okay. There's so much joy, and there's, you know, and even in difficult times, you know, there's harmony in difficulty. There's joy in those times because they're not feared anymore. Life has a lot of different complicated things, and it just gets so much easier when we don't allow our mind to get into this fear and judgment. It's just, okay, what is the lesson here? And I'll take one thing at a time, and everything will be okay, really. And then you'll look back and you'll say, okay, I didn't let the fears or the shame take me over. It just becomes more and more non-existent. Shame itself, fears and judgments are just the natural state of the mind. But when you have that calm within, it is like the starting point for each day to walk with these skills and with just a different way of life where, you know, there is balance and you don't expect all happiness nor fear that there will be all pain. It just is. Just is. And it flows. It flows so much better. Yes. And there's really a lot of joy. There's so much. I cannot express how much joy there is in the parenting moments today. It's like, okay, now I understand. Now I understand why this happened. When my oldest son told me the radio story that he was being more gentle on himself during finals this week, like, okay, maybe I'll get one of his A pluses. You know, it just was, okay, you know, that's good stuff.
It's really good stuff. And I think whether you get the A+ or not, I think rather than getting something, I think you're really giving something to, you know, to all the listeners or to the people in your community or in your orbit, that in sharing your story, because to hear you speak this way and to feel that sense of how much joy you get in parenting, knowing your story. So again, if listeners go back and read your memoir, it's really remarkable. It's really, I mean, kind of gives me chills. It's just shows what's possible. And I think that, you know, for my understanding is, if we can get out of our heads and we can break some of our thinking habits, there's so much more joy, so much more.
So much more. Yeah. So much more. And the level of connection, the emotional connection, just all of it is so amazingly beautiful with our children when we have done our own work. You know, I can say to my youngest who, you know, he has this scar that he would ask questions about, and I shared a story how, you know, a friend of mine had a scar, and I asked him, I'll be quick here, you know, how's the scar healing? And one of my sons was like, I have a scar too. And here was a, you know, strong, respectable man that the boys, you know, looked up to. And he said, you know, see, I have one too. You know, we are the same. And like instantaneously in my son's psyche, at least I hope, somewhere deep, that he had a different understanding of this scar that his friends had pointed out. And you know, I grew up with a big birthmark on my face that the kids would say, wash your face, and make fun of me. And he had heard some similar messages from me. But again, in that moment, a simple, simple moment, it's just, we are the same. And like all the parents or other people that are not parents that are listening today, we are all the same. We are infinite spirits. We are infinite spirits in a body that has a mind. And we are all doing the best we can. And the more aware we become of how our mind works, you know, and we share that with each other. We share our struggles, you know. And we realize we are the same, and the less shame there is and the more human connection there is. So I just hope that this helps others. And I encourage anybody that's struggling to reach out for help, because we are the same and no one's alone.
And I think we'll probably connect again when you come out with your next book. That's the other thing I was listening to.
I hope so.
So this won't be our, hopefully this won't be our last conversation. Oh, I'm so grateful to be able to talk with you and to, you know, and let you give voice to some of these insights and so much of what you've learned yourself. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you so much for what you do and for doing a second one.